Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
Hello everyone, this is the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your weekly discussion of comics and other pulp culture, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. I am Robbie Dorman.
I'm Eric Z. Goodnight. I'm not falling into the trap of doing a stupid voice this time.
The trap?
I'm not falling into the trap of doing stupid voices anymore. Ha ha ha.
Ha. Oh, yes.
So now we're talking to each other like the Count?
I don't know. One!
That's one idiot!
This is episode 18!
Good God.
I know.
We are insufferable.
We are. We're still fresh off our Dragon Con hangover. Eric's still a little under the weather.
Yeah, I'm a little coughing Joe here. I think I'll make it.
I think we got a jam-packed show this week. I'm kind of excited about all the stuff we got to talk about. But let's launch right into checking in.
Let's just do that.
Cut to the chase.
Yep.
I don't know what you're doing, Eric, so I want you to go first.
You want me to go first?
I want you to go first.
My goodness. Couple of little exciting things. I picked up a trade of your favorite book. Can you guess what it is?
My favorite book.
Your favorite book. The trade paperback. It's The God Butcher.
I picked up
The God Butcher.
Excellent. You read it?
I have not. I just picked it up after watching Sports Ball.
Sports Ball's good, too.
I came back from Sports Ball. Are we going to have a Sports Ball special? Because this is the first day of Sports Ball.
This is the first big weekend of Sports Ball, yes.
It is. It's amazing.
I can hear, like, the dripping of your sarcasm.
I like football.
Do you?
Footballs.
You like the footballs that you call Sports Ball?
I like a mefto.
A mefto?
Yeah, that's how they say it in Japan. The American football
is a mefto. That's
it. Yeah, they abbreviate American Ameri, or you know, or Amer, and then futo, a mefto.
Okay, that's something I learned something today.
You did learn about a mefto.
A mefto.
A mefto is good for you.
Did you have a lot of fun with the sports ball?
No, good God, it was a horrible game.
What game did you watch?
It was the Steelers versus Tennessee.
And Tennessee won.
It was embarrassing, for both of them. But, like, really early, the center got taken out, and then the game sucked forever. And continued to suck. Yes, forever.
Infinite time.
Yes, I'm pretty sure there is just an infinite, like, just continuation of time, and I'm trapped in it somehow. It's amazing.
My main fantasy football team is narrowly in the lead. I don't expect it to keep it, but it's possible that it could happen. I don't think it will, but I'll cross my fingers and hope to die.
I hope you die too.
My very expensive fake football team gets the win this week.
How does all that crap work? I am genuinely curious in your fantasy sports ball team.
My fantasy sports ball team.
Mm-hmm.
You just asked the question that every single fantasy football player loves to answer.
I know. I can't wait for 3 hours of this answer. I'm so excited. Oh my gosh.
It's one of those things that everyone talks about but no one else is interested in. Like, it's your team, no one else cares.
Oh, my God.
But basically, the standard rules, I'll just explain it, because
there's millions of variations that other people go by, but the standard rules is that you amass a collection of men who love the sports ball.
A collection of men. I like it already. Ooh.
And generally it's 10 or 12 teams in the league. And each, it, like, you just, in like the normal football draft, each team gets to pick a player, and you fill up your roster of real life players depending on how good they are in getting fantasy points. A typical roster, you'll have a quarterback, two running backs, two wide receivers, a flex spot, which can be either a running back or a wide receiver, a tight end, a kicker, and then a team defense. You pick the entire defense, and then however well they do, they'll also get you points. But, and then if they throw touchdowns, or they run or throw for yards, or run for yards, or catch for a certain amount of receiving yards, or
yeah, it's all based on stats,
their real life stats, and then they get a representative amount of points. And
here's what I'm curious about: who's tabulating all these stats? Is there like some
computer does it?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is there like some definitive source that everyone is using, or most people? There's like a couple sources, and some people use one.
The NFL does it. I mean,
it's available for free. It seems like they're really getting behind this fantasy football crap now.
Well, it generates billions of dollars of revenue for them.
I don't see how, but that's fine.
They run their, well, the NFL, I mean, one, it attracts a lot of attention. It gets viewership up, which they make most of their money from TV deals and advertising. So more people like football, more money they make. Two, NFL runs their own fantasy site at NFL.com.
Of course.
And they make money on advertising through that. Plus, I don't know if they run any money leagues. They may or may not. I don't think they do, but they may. If they do, that also generates revenue. And they have to report, they report stats anyway, just for the regular fan, and for record keeping processes, because that is important for some reason. And then in the days before there were computers, people would take them and do it by hand, and you wouldn't get your score for the week until Wednesday or Thursday, whenever your commissioner got around to actually, you know, finalizing all the scores. But now,
it really sounds like an excellent way to combine all the fun of football with all the fun of accounting.
Well, not really, because you're not doing any real math. So a computer does all the work. You just plug players. You plug the players in you want to start this that week, and then the computer does all the work.
Is there a program or something that you use to keep track of it?
No, just, I mean, the websites, all the websites. I mean, Yahoo Fantasy is pretty big. Okay. Yahoo Fantasy is better than Yahoo itself, really. ESPN runs, of course, many, many different types of leagues. NFL runs them. We use a site called FleaFlicker.com. I like it just because it's very simple.
You should link to it. I do enjoy football. It's not really my thing for the most part because I don't have much of a connection to it.
Well, get a fantasy football team. You'll immediately have a vested interest in every game.
I'm sure I will, but I think the whole idea of it is it's sort of taking football and doing a nerdy spin on it. It's hacking football. It's fun. Yeah.
It's like D&D for football, yeah, for sports,
totally,
fans, basically.
Totally.
And then it makes you interested in, like, there are players on my team do not care about their team, do not care about them as a person, or how they perform. But as soon as they're on my team, I'm rooted, rooting for them very, very hard, because I want to get more points. So games between two crap teams that I normally would not pay attention to at all, I just go, oh, okay. It's like gambling, because, I mean, I have money in this league. I have $100 in this league, and at the end of the year, if you're first place, you win quite a bit of money. So
that shit buys a lot of Cheetos, my man.
I understand, but I mean, it makes it more interesting. But yeah, it's a lot of fun.
That's good times.
Anything else did you wanted to check in with her?
Oh. Well, I wanted to say that I've been talking to a local space around here, and I'm going to try and do some artwork and get it shown down here which I'm awesome. Very excited about, is a restaurant, sort of art gallery called Cafe Hay down here, where, you know, relatively cool people hang out at. I like a lot of the staff there, and, you know, I talked to them about showing some pieces. I came up with a series I'm going to do for a Halloween show they're going to have next month. So I've already bought my supplies, and I'm going to do some artwork. So,
do you want to disclose what the theme is?
No, I'll talk about it as I'm working on them, but okay. I'm gonna keep it on the cuff for now. But
all
right. I'm super excited because I'm looking for excuses to do artwork and to get myself out there. Oh, that Morden I was drawing looks awesome, by the way. I started inking him.
Cool. I can get behind anything involving Morden.
Well, then you are going to love all this Morden / I've been writing. And it's got you and me and Morden in it. It's Robbie / Eric / Morden.
How does... I didn't know how the Salarian, you know, sexual...
Do not ingest.
Oh.
That's... Do you know that line?
Yes, yes.
You
brought it up with me before.
I'm sure I have. I just don't know if anyone... I don't know that you would be playing Femme Shep and romancing Garrus all that much.
I generally did play Femme Shep.
Really?
I did not ever romance Garrus, though.
You should have.
He was like my buddy. Like,
well, that is what Garrus is. Yeah. Was... So were you just a celibate Femme Shep?
I was asexual, I would say, you know, dedicated to the mission.
I think that's a little unfair. I think Femme Shep deserves to blow off a little steam.
She was worried about those Reapers. That it preoccupied her.
Male Shep was worried about Reapers too. But, you know, Daddy gotta break him off a piece.
I will not have you talking about my femship that way.
Do not ingest, Robbie.
I know. You've told me. Do not ingest. I won't worry. It's not a concern.
Don't do it.
Thank you for talking me down.
I was worried about you. It'll just destroy your insides. Seems like things must have happened to you as well.
They did. I really just have a couple of video games to check in with, both on Steam. That's where I got them. A lot of buzz coming around these games, too, online. I've seen it several places. The first one I want to check in with is called Gone Home. It's a point-and-click adventure, first person, set in, I think, the mid-90s. And you play this female character. She's gone off after high school to she's in college, but in like a summer break, she's gone off to explore the world, you know, the European backpacking or whatever. And she's come home and on this rainy night, and you come back to your parents' house and no one's home. And so you come in and it kind of plays a lot on the tropes of, you know, preconceptions about a game like that would go, like an abandoned, empty house and a, you know, creepy rainstorm going on in the background, whatever. But it's really just an exploration of this family and its dynamics. And this character would have all this knowledge already, for the most part. Maybe not the intricacies of all of it, but she knows her family. You, as a seeing through her eyes, have no idea about her parents or her sister. And so you're exploring this house, going through people's rooms and picking up pieces of paper, and you're looking at, and you slowly put together this puzzle of what their life is like and how all these relationships fit together. And it's quite poignant and really touching. I don't want to go any further detail because it would kind of ruin it a little. But it's a lot. I played it all in one sitting. It's not a long game by any means. I think it's maybe 3 hours. to play through the whole thing. I don't know if I saw everything there is. I saw a lot of it. I know that. I got what I needed to get out of it. But it's worth the experience. It's a great game. It's quite interesting. Very well done. The other game I want to check in with is also really interesting. It's called Papers, Please. And the premise of the game, the graphics are like a 16-bit. It's a kind of not very complicated graphically. It's more of a concept, high concept game where you're basically a citizen of like this, the communist Soviet Union-esque Soviet bloc country, probably in the 80s, I would assume, just from the way it's set up. But you draw this job as a border patrol person. Basically, you sit in the booth and you process people as they want to cross into the next country or next district, whatever it is. And you go day by day, and people come up one at a time. They give you their paperwork, and you have to, given on what the criteria is for that day, you have to decide if they are allowed to go through or not. It's relatively simple at first. Then it gets more and more and more and more complicated until you're looking at 6-7 different pieces of paper, cross-checking different things, making sure seals and names are spelled correctly and the date isn't. It gets very complicated very quickly. The really interesting thing is you have to feed your family at the end of the day, and you get paid per person that goes through. So if you don't get enough people through, you go too slow, your family like starves. Or dies from, illnesses.
That's pretty brutal.
Yeah, and you get punished if you let too many people through that aren't supposed to be through. But it's not really limited only that, because also you're presented with, these moral choices. This guy comes up, all his paperwork is perfect, it's in order. You send him through, he goes, "My wife is right behind me. Let her through too, please." So he goes through it. His wife comes up. She doesn't have the right paperwork. What do you do? Do you send her through and hope that you don't get penalized for it? Or send her back and she's stuck. Her husband's... They're both stranded, isolated from each other. What do you do? There's a terrorist bombing one day. Shuts down the place early. And what do you do? Do you stop all the people from that country? Do you not let any of them through? What do you do? Do you get extra money if you alert the authorities if this person may be a possible, dangerous person, dangerous ideas, whatever. A thought criminal, if you want.
A thought criminal.
Basically. And if you alert your supervisors about it, they'll come in and take them away, black bag them, basically, and you get extra money. What do you do? Do you do that?
Sure. Look out, Robbie.
Exactly. That's kind of how the game goes, and it's really interesting how all these different things interweave. You have many different desires and needs pulling at you in this game. That's probably the really interesting thing about it. That's all I got.
I was looking at the video for both of those on Steam. They look pretty fantastic. God, I love indie games.
Yeah, they're both very well. They're totally different, both very, very good.
Mm. I'm glad you've pointed these out. These are good recommendations.
I think my favorite thing about Gone Home is that it's a quick game. Is that you can get a really good experience mm-hmm. in 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
You don't have to play it for 100 hours and go, oh,
absolutely.
Like Skyrim or Fallout or anything like that.
I know. Then there really needs to be. I am so happy that there are more indie games and that there are just really great ways like Steam to distribute them. It's so wonderful. Steam and the iOS store and the Android store. It's so wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
It makes me so happy that it doesn't take... You don't have to be a huge company and produce carts and sink all this money and all this technology. It's wonderful.
No, you can... Anyone can do it.
Absolutely. And that's beautiful.
Anyone with the drive.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's it for checking in. We're going to move on to a little bit of news. I have a few things I just want to... I mean, they're not really anything we need to talk about that I think we should at least announce.
I don't get a chance to say no to them.
You'll like all of them. So
I'm being told.
If you disagree with me, you speak up. Okay?
I will not hesitate.
I do have one thing I want to discuss with you after these items.
Okay.
That is interesting. First of all, Fantagraphics has signed a deal with Don Rosa to publish his entire library, basically.
Wow. That's huge.
Yeah, starting next year, they're going to release The Son of the Sun.
I actually owned that book.
Do you?
They're going
to release it.
Signed.
Wow. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's worth a million kronens.
A million kronens. They're going to re-release it, hardcover. That's the first of, I imagine, a whole line of them. So, I mean, not too long. I think they said in 2005, Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck sold 30,000 copies. So, there is a demand for it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Next is Saga, won the 2013 Hugo for Best Graphic Story.
Hot damn.
Surprising. Probably not surprising many people, but
I forced Saga on someone today at the comic book store.
Did you?
I did. I felt really good about it.
They should thank you for it.
They should. He had to make the difficult decision because I was also trying to get him to buy My Life is a Weapon.
Ah, yes.
The Hawkeye.
Yeah.
And he's like, which one of these do I want? And I said,
you want them
that's,
both.
That is what I said. I'm like, you know, barring that you don't buy them both because they're both amazing and both two of the best books from last year or this year or whenever in the hell.
Yeah.
I guess really kind of they started last year.
Yeah, they started last year.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like barring you're not going to get both. I'm not even going to hesitate to say Saga, but you really are missing out on something special.
Yeah,
because Hawkeye is hot shit.
Yeah, don't eat lunch for a couple of days or something.
That was what he said was what he was worried about. You know, he's sort of a dad now, so he kind of wants to feed children.
Feed his family.
Yeah,
I guess
maybe.
I guess that's important.
Yeah,
but Hawkeye's so good.
Hawkeye's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not better than watching your children not starve, though. you have biological
impulses, I know, instincts that override everything. The last quick news item is Mark Waid, writer of Daredevil, another really amazing book, and also, you know, writes Indestructible Hulk, numerous other books in other places, wrote Kingdom Come, blah, 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 blah. He has bought a physical comic book store.
Nice.
In I think it's in Illinois or Indiana.
Illinois.
One of those states.
One of those countries.
One of those countries.
Like Georgia.
Like Georgia. Georgia is an independent nation.
The Independent Republic of Georgia.
And it's really interesting because he owns a digital comics company. He owns Thrillbent.com, which is really on the leading edge of digital comic books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, new ways of telling these digital stories. And now it's kind of interesting that he is almost going backwards and he's
mm-hmm.
purchased an equal share in this store, and also he is allied with another store owned by another group of people who do a lot of children's books. Children's comics.
Neat.
And so they're going to try and push all this stuff together. And he's actually going to be blogging about all this stuff, which I'm going to be very interested to read. See his interactions with the retail experience.
That seems like... I mean, I wonder if he's going to try and create a space kind of like the Geekeasy or a comic shop that's kind of like a nerd nexus.
I think
a comic book store owned by a big name like that'd be a cool place.
Well, he's already said he's like the biggest Superman fan on the planet, basically. So he's going to bring in a lot of his own memorabilia. So that's a draw right there. Then he's going to he lives there, so he's going to be there. And he's going to be a draw to some people just because he's
absolutely.
There. And he said he's going to make it. He wants to make it family friendly. He wants to make kids and he wants kids to want to be there. You know, he wants families to walk in and, you know, read comics together. So he's going to make that a draw. That, I mean, this is all kinds of, I guess, initial ideas and stuff, but I really enjoy. I like Mark Waid as a person. He's a good guy, and he really loves comics. He's in it.
He's in it to win it.
Yep.
It seems like he's going to end up building, you know, his own Tate's.
Probably
his own Tate's comics.
I imagine. I just by looking at the pictures of the store, it's already like looks like a nice store.
Nice.
So I don't think he's probably just going to try and put his little spin on things. The last item, and this is the one I wanted to talk to you about, Eric and C.
Show enough.
And it's, I don't know if you've heard about this. It's kind of blew up into, meaning I saw it on a non-comic website.
Okay. I know exactly what this is. Yeah, go ahead.
About Batwoman?
Batwoman.
Yeah, Batwoman.
No, I didn't see that. I saw. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. J.H. Williams and Black and what's his name? Something Blackman. Two creators who work on Batwoman for DC basically have quit. Quit that book. And
yes, I have heard about that. Okay,
quit the book, quit DC after DC refused to let them have Batwoman and her fiancé get married. Lesbian. They're mm-hmm. lesbian fiance. They're a lesbian couple. They would not allow the marriage to happen. And, I mean, that's not the only thing. That's what the news, of course, picked up on, because it's catchy. But, it's a last in a long line of editorial interference by DC. And one of numerous creators who have left DC after reports of heavy editorial interference in their storylines and last minute changes and all kinds of things like that. I'm just curious what your thoughts on that are and on DC burning all these bridges with all these creators and all these artists.
I think DC has every right to moderate it the way they want to. That being said, I think they're being really kind of ignorant, and they are doing exactly what you're saying. They're burning because that was a very good book. they were doing it right.
That one was very good.
You know, whether or not they had any respect for it, and that's the kind of thing that would draw in new kinds of readers, new audiences.
I think that and hearing other reports about DC, something about, I don't know. This is all hearsay.
Of course.
Obviously. There was a report of a source from within DC saying Dan DiDio, who's their editor in chief, basically saying that they're making comics for 45-year-old men.
Yeah.
And this does not help that. It's not a helpful argument against that.
It doesn't help, you know, 45-year-old neckbeards.
No, it doesn't. It makes me feel very conflicted.
Yeah,
because I like to know that the people these artists who are working hard on these books are making a decent wage and are being able to tell the stories they want. I understand DC wanting to be able to control their own characters, but consistency in editorial standpoint is really, I think, the problem. Because I don't think it's them saying, no, you can't do this. It's them saying yes, then no, and then no, and then yes, and changing things around all the time. This time they've alluded to things that were a year in the making. Things they set out to do a year ago. And now it was a yes, and now it's a no.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I know Marvel has edit. I mean, I follow some of their editors on Tumblr or on Twitter, mm-hmm. and I know they have the oversight about what the characters can and cannot do. It just, you don't seem to hear any of these complaints from any of the creators working over there.
Yeah,
and I don't think it's really a product of them, you know, keeping everything hush hush. It seems that This is very also very interesting. Bob Harris is one of the head editors at DC right now.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Harris was also one of the head editors in Marvel in the late 90s when they went bankrupt. After after all the people who worked for Marvel left because they couldn't do anything because he was constantly meddling.
Hmm.
After he hired the people who left the company to found Image Comics to come back in as freelancers to do the awful... You know that Captain America shot by Rob Liefeld?
The one where I know the one. The one where it looks like, you know, he's been sat on.
Where his chest is literally like 5 feet out from his head.
Yes.
That is part of Bob Harris's work. He's basically editorial work. He hired Rob Liefeld to do that. And it's the same kind of complaints that were coming out of Marvel in the late 90s are the same kind of complaints that are coming out of DC right now. And it makes me feel conflicted. Like, I don't want to give DC my business. But I feel like it's... We kind of have to for the podcast just to present them as a choice. I don't know.
Hmm.
It's I mean, I feel bad now knowing that, oh, well, I just spent $8 on DC this week. I gave them my money. And they're not really doing anything I would endorse or condone.
No, they're pretty consistently putting out weaker work. I mean, I'm not going to say that everything they're doing is weaker, but I feel like pretty consistently Marvel is like hitting my mark a lot better.
I've always enjoyed Marvel more.
Yeah.
But I do own many DC books. Mm-hmm. I mean, a quarter of my bookshelf is all Batman stuff, but you feel that idea that they're going for mm-hmm. that 45-year-old man who's read comics since he was 20. And I'm not that guy. I like Marvel has opened their scope a little.
And you know, I was thinking about this today when I saw, what's the show called? Arrow?
Yeah. CW show.
Yes. I mean, it's a network for like teenagers.
It is, yes.
Same thing with Smallville.
It's directly, you know, basically they went, oh, well, Smallville worked. Let's do
it. Yeah, no, totally. But like all of them seem to be about young men taking their shirts off. And I think that this has it's pretty clear who the audience for this is. And yet they're not trying to tie this in with books. They're not trying to cross market. I don't know. I don't get it.
It doesn't make any sense to me what they're doing, and it kind of bothers me.
Personally, if I think DC needs to start making Yowie. I mean, we're talking huge. Or romance books with Batman in them. I don't know. Something like this.
They would make a shit.
Holy God, they would. Do you have any idea how much money romance novels make?
A lot of money.
It like as much as the whole rest of like the modern like publishing industry.
Yes. If they made Batman comic books or just romance novels, like they had someone write with Bruce Wayne as a character,
yeah, totally,
they would make a ton of money.
Robbie, let's not publish this podcast. Let's go make superhero romance novels.
You act like I haven't already started this.
I actually know.
I'm 75,000 words in. All right, I just got to write the last act.
I've wrote 630,000 words. Yes. I've been passing it back and forth to Alan Moore.
Alan Moore, and he's written some despicable things about being done to Batman.
That does not even surprise me a little bit.
Involving Superman.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Let's move on. I don't want to dwell on this forever, but...
I think it's best.
It merited some kind of discussion.
I think that was the best discussion.
So we're going to go on to Weekly Floppies, the floppiest part of the week.
It is, indeed.
My original pick for the... Indie book of the week is published by Avatar, and they don't put anything out digitally.
That's stupid.
I know, it really is. I wanted to read the new Jonathan Hickman book by Avatar, but I can't because I can't get it on my iPad. I'm not going to go buy one book.
Yeah, totally.
Physically. So as I said, I decided to do a book called Reality Check Number 1. Writer is Glenn Brunswick, artist Victor Bogdanovic, colors Paul Little, letters Russ Wooten. The basic plot line is that it's about a comic book writer who, all his ideas, writer artist, I should say, all his ideas have vanished from his head, and he doesn't know why. He writes this successful book called Dark Hour about this superhero. He's basically a Batman analog who is concerned more about his dating life than about fighting supervillains. But most of this book isn't involved in that at all. It's more about this artist writer who is going through this crisis because he can't remember what the hell is going on. And you get kind of reveal at the end that his superhero guy, Dark Hour, has come into the real world. What did you think about this, Eric? I'm curious. I have no idea what you would think about this.
I'm surprised that you don't have some idea, because I think this book is retarded. Everything you just described, I'm like, yeah, that all that happened. This sounds even dumber hearing you say it after having read it. I wasn't like pulling my teeth out when I was reading it. But yeah. It feels pretty heavy-handed and kind of dumb. It's a dumb concept. I mean,
I was looking at the books, you know, I had two or three. I was like, yeah, maybe which one of these I should do? I was read the concept of it, you know, just the quick little pitch, and it seemed like, oh, this will be like a lighthearted, fun book. Like, you know, we are always like reading all this grim stuff. Let's do something that's fun and light. This isn't light at all.
So you thought Dark Hour was going to be was going to be light?
No. I'm going to read the pitch for this on the website I use. That, you know,
it's sure.
Comiclist.com. They list everything that gets released every week, and I just go through it and look at what's coming out, and I go, what's it? Here. A struggling artist, Willard Penn, scores an unlikely hit with his new comic. The story centers on a hero more concerned with his libido than serving justice. After an unexpected sellout, Willard can't recall anything about his story. That night, the book's hero shows up outside Willard's window, refusing to return to the comic until he finds true love. Exasperated, Willard is forced to help the lovesick hero meet the perfect woman, but he'll need to hurry because the book's villain, a homicidal maniac, has entered his world as well. The last half of that paragraph doesn't happen.
No, at all. It does not There's happen
nothing,
in this book.
Nothing of that. I was like, well, I was thinking they'd hit this in like the first panel. Like two pages would be this, and then the rest we'd like be on a ride. Exciting, interesting. But no. This is like all dwelling on like this morose creator, this writer guy. He's drawing women who walk by, they slap him. His brother. He's flashbacks where his brother dies and he loses his girlfriend. It's not happy at all. I was thinking this is gonna be a light thing where he's like trying to help this superhero who just wants to get laid. And he's like, no, you have to go back. And then he also is dealing with like this evil villain. But none of that happens in this book.
Well, Robbie, you have to understand that you have just written a much better comic in your head than what this is.
Yeah.
This book is a solid do not buy from me. And I'm sorry to do this to an independent publisher like this. Who's publishing this?
This is Image. So Image,
all right, fuck them.
Image isn't doing too bad.
I don't give a shit.
Walking Dead is like a print. They're making plenty of money off of that.
But no, screw this book. It's stupid.
I do want... The art is very Howard Chaykin-esque. That's all I have to say about it. That's all my expert opinion is. It's not terrible. Again, it's not terrible. It's just not what I wanted. I would have never picked this book if this was what it's going to be.
I just think that it's
not good. I'll say
it's
that.
Bad. It's bad. It's B A D. It's B A double D.
I'm also a solid do not buy.
Yeah.
If they had delivered on what I was reading,
I think I should have been paid to read this.
Unfortunately, we can't work out that deal with anybody.
Sons of bitches.
Okay, now on to DC.
On to DC.
On to DC. We have Forever Evil, number one. The big... what the last crossover event is leading to another crossover event.
Yes.
So, if Trinity War wasn't stupid enough for you... now we're leading into Forever Evil. Eric, I know you don't know this because you weren't reading or even were reading about the last several issues of Trinity War.
Right.
All these villains, the evil villains, the leaders of them you see in this book, are from Earth 3. That's why it was called Trinity War.
Ah.
It has nothing to do with Pandora or the Justice Leagues or anything like that. They're from Earth 3. So basically, we see them are they're whatever the hell they're called. What are they? The sinister criminal crime society.
Yeah, weren't they? They were also in. They were in Crisis, weren't they? That's where I thought I saw them from.
They are present, and I don't know how they work. And with the New 52, these guys have been, especially the Superman, especially Overman. You see him in a lot of other books. In like DC's history, he's like an alternate reality Superman. But apparently, and you see this whole book, they're gathering the villains to, you know, to take over the world, do what they want, show that the Justice League's dead, they can do what we want, blah 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 blah. I don't know. There's not much happens in this book. You see a lot, all these villains, you know, joining together. And then they beat the shit out of Nightwing.
They certainly do that. Take that, Dick.
Yeah, take that.
They are beating that dick. I'm glad not only that I get to say that, but I got you to repeat it.
Exactly. But other than that, you see some Lex Luthor stuff, where apparently he's like, now he wants Superman to show up. But the rest of it is just kind of like fan service. Look at all these villains. Look at them.
Yeah.
Look, they're here.
Oh, God, yeah, like the part of the end where everyone's, like, just, like, they always address everyone by their name.
Yeah.
That...
But for what, Multiplex?
Exactly, oh my God.
The chimps here, they call it, yeah, the Gorilla Grodd, they call it the everyone else insults. You'd think you'd not insult a giant fucking gorilla that could kill you. They must have torn it right out of the sky. No, Ivy, I did. Despero!
Mother,
what do you
fuck.
Think Waller's going to do when she finds out we joined a new team? Deadshot?
Yeah, doesn't that make you want to vomit?
The Joker's here somewhere. He's just wearing someone else's face. He's going to start trouble. Bane? If Joker starts anything, Penguin? Why would he say Penguin? He's standing right next to him. He can just look at him.
Yeah. Does that page make any sense? No.
Nothing happens in this book. It's the same thing as the Trinity War. We see the Superman guy, the evil Superman, burn some C-level villain. Who is it? Monocle. Who the hell is Monocle? He heat visions a guy and explodes him. Other than that, and then beating up Nightwing for some reason, nothing else happens. Did you like the art, Eric?
I think it's good, but it's too Jim Lee.
Yeah,
it's, you know how I feel about that.
I never read the... The creator. It's Jeff Johns is the writer. David Finch is doing the art on this. David Finch, he generally doesn't draw as much as Jim Lee-ish as this.
Well, they're probably leaning on him to do it.
But, I mean, he does have a more, you know, a style that's similar to this. But I usually like his work. It's not that it's bad, but it is very Jim Lee-ish.
I like how he draws evil Wonder Woman. Just putting that out there.
Okay. Evil Wonder Queen.
Wonder Queen?
That's her name, isn't it?
No, that's the shit we came up with.
I think that's her name.
No, her name is Superwoman.
Superwoman, okay.
We came up with Wonder Queen. That's Wonder Woman smashed together with White Queen.
Oh, yeah.
Wonder Queen. She fights Super Squatch.
Wonder Queen's better.
Don't you have our whole catalog memorized?
I don't, actually. And the fact that our stupid shit can easily be confused with this.
Yeah.
I think says enough.
I'm telling you, I'm pretty sure we can write a better book than this.
Yeah. This is this crossover, I don't know what the hell is going on with this. I mean, it's taken over the entire DC. There's no other DC books this week. I grabbed the only... our next book reviewing is the only thing that is not a villain book. Wow. Everything else is a villain book.
Right. Why not do any of those, though?
As I don't want to give them my money for them. I don't want to indulge their stupid... fucking gimmick bullshit.
Oh, come on.
I hear
they're going to put all the state flags on this book.
Yeah, I know. We were invested in Animal Man, were we not?
Yeah.
We were in Animal Man. We're going, this book's really good. I want to know what's happening next. What is going to happen in the next issue? Oh, wait, we have to wait 2 months for the next one because they got to have villain books instead for some reason. Gimmicky bullshit. That's what. That's the reason. You can go buy a variant cover of the Catwoman book for $30.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm a don't buy. Do not buy Forever Evil. Don't buy any of the villain books. Eric, what do you say?
I agree completely. Because fuck this shit.
Yeah.
Eric out.
We have still the rest of the podcast to record.
Nope, drop the mic.
Excellent. I'll just do this by myself, I guess.
You'd better.
The other DC
book... Do my voice, quick. All right, no, I'm back.
Okay, good.
That was scary. Sorry, guys.
The other DC book we're doing is an annual, I guess. I don't know what you want to call it. It's a collection of Batman stories called Batman Black and White Number 1, with pencils only. Collection 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different stories... A variety of creators. Some of them I really enjoy. I mean, the art. I mean, you have Joe Quinones, Sean Murphy, Chris Samnee, Neil Adams, Michael Cho. Neil Adams wrote and drew his story. We have the other writers: Chip Kidd, Maris Wicks, John Arcudi, Howard Mackey.
But I want to throw this out there, though, that it's not all pencils only. The first story in particular is all digital art. It's just black and white.
Okay. Yeah, that's true.
Same with the Harley Quinn.
Not colors.
Neil Adams is all pencils.
Yeah, okay. It's inked sometimes or digitally.
Yeah.
But not colored. There's no colors. It is black and white.
Black and white, shades of gray, you know.
Right, yeah.
All that good stuff.
I think when you say black and white, it makes people assume it's grayscale.
Yeah.
You get a variety of stories here. One where Robin teams up with Superman. We get one where Neil Adams does this weird-ass story about this, about, like, there's, like, a zombie Batman, and then he's unable to stop, like, all these social injustices, but Bruce Wayne is. Really weird. Yeah. I didn't know how to react to that.
I liked that he did it.
Yeah, I like, you know, that it exists. It's just, it's crazy. I'm surprised to see it in this book. But it's interesting. And his art's great.
No, it's nice. Like, it's really, like, this panel of him punching the Joker. Like, I just love the way that looks. I love the exaggeration in Joker's face and that he says woofa for no good reason.
Woofa.
But, like, look at the way Batman's drawn there.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Doesn't that excite you?
It's pretty awesome.
It's, like, so cool.
It's good.
I feel like such a nerd. Like, oh, what is Batman? But it really is, like, I don't know. In my mind, that's what Batman looks like.
Yeah, it does. That's
the effing Batman. That is the goddamn Batman right there. It ain't, like, this Jim Lee shit. It's that.
No, it's not. It's not some pretty boy Batman. It is.
No, that's effing Batman right there, motherfucker. Yes. That's what I like.
Exactly.
Hal and the Joker getting punched in the face.
The next one is a base. It seems just like a continuation of, like, the animated series kind of story. Yeah. Where you get Harley Quinn and Ivy, like, doing this little team-up adventure with Batman kind of actually helping them. sort of. A cute little story, fun.
Yeah.
It brought me right back to the animated series. What made it so good?
I can really hear Harley Quinn's voice and her annoying ass voice in my head.
That's my pudding.
Oh God, we're both a little too good at doing that voice.
I know.
Next podcast, we'll do that voice the whole time.
Just wait till I get my hands on her.
I don't know what's happening.
Then we get this interesting story about, like, it's a Greaser Batman story.
I love Greaser Batman.
Batman working on his car. And unfortunately, there's, like, nothing wrong with his car.
I want to fix my car. Look how big my forearms are.
I know, look at them.
I'm going to go combs my hair.
Why is Batman talking like that now?
Look at him.
It's true.
Batman talks like that.
His forearms are literally larger than his head.
Yes.
It's
like that man could, I don't know, he bench presses that car when he's done working on it.
He's like, let me get the engine out and then I'll bench press it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the last story is, I think, my favorite. The last one is my favorite, where it's kind of a Chris Samney did the art, and it's probably why I like it so much.
It's really good. Oh my God, I love it.
But it's kind of this noir murder, mini murder mystery with, should we say who?
I don't think it matters that much.
Yeah, the ventriloquist trying to recover parts of Scarface.
Yeah, it's like six pages.
It is. It's not a long story, but it puts a lot of stuff in those six pages or whatever it is.
It does. This is it's so gorgeous.
Yeah, it's really good.
Like every time, you know what it kind of reminds me of is it's like the coffin but less dark.
Yeah, it's a very kind of, there's murder, but then it's very kind of,
yeah, it's lighthearted. It's pretty light. It's a lighthearted murder.
Lighthearted, like he's axing people to death. Of course, he's axing mobsters to death, so you don't feel as bad about it.
Nah,
course,
it's like, ah.
Then he puts it. They just put the axe to a baby's throat. That is not as lighthearted.
I think it needed some emotional response. That is a fat little baby.
It is a fat little baby.
His little potato head.
It is. But I'm excited. This is great. Buy this. Definitely.
Totally.
Batman Black and White number one. This is really good. I don't know why DC can't put stuff out like this.
Because this is like them getting out of the way of their creators.
Yeah, we wouldn't want that, I guess.
No, that would be really stupid. You'd make good books.
Yeah, I'm excited for the next one because Raphael Grandpa is doing the art on one of them.
Ooh, Raphael Grandpa
doing Batman.
I do love my grandpa.
Yeah, and Jeff Lemire is writing one. He writes Animal Man.
I'm not such a big fan of.
No, you hate him, don't you?
He writes the Animal Man I've been reading?
Yes.
Really?
Really.
Then I should stop hating him. I did not even know that.
Now you do.
He just shouldn't draw things, I guess.
That's probably a solid argument on your behalf.
Yeah.
We're going to go next to Marvel, and first up, Infinity, issue number 2, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Jeremy Opeña, or Jerome Opeña? I'm never sure if it's Jeremy or Jerome. I think it's Jeremy.
No, it's Jerome.
Is it Jerome?
It's written Jerome.
I know, but he's Spanish, so I think it'd be, you know, maybe it's...
It's Jerome.
Jerome? That's funny. Jeremy Opeña and Dustin Weaver, colors by Justin Ponsor, letters by Chris Eliopoulos. There's also a large amount of variant covers.
Big surprise.
Big surprise. It's a big crossover event. This is... we get a quick synopsis of the stuff that's happened already. And then some really good stuff with the war out in space. And with Black Bolt on Earth.
Yeah, I could just feel your excitement with that part. He's awesome in this book.
He is. I And he actually brings them to this. He draws the other Illuminati into this alternate dimension where he can actually talk without repercussions.
Yes.
And he drops a bombshell on the last page, which actually intrigued me. The last panel itself. Good cliffhanger. But it's Thanos is basically taking a demand to Black Bolt that he wants every... He'll let the Inhumans live if he... If they will kill every Inhuman age 16 to 22.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, Black Bolt doesn't want to do.
Well, I would hope so.
And the Builders have unleashed, like, a plague on one of the worlds that they're about to lose. So they're, I guess, using a scorched earth policy at this point. Black Bolt's heavily involved. I'm a big fan of it already. But it's, again, Hickman, there's a lot of stuff in this.
That's really my biggest complaint with it, is
really
it's
too much.
Too much. Like, I really think they should have pared this down. It's like they're telling three issues of story in one issue. It's too big. And it's already got too many tie-ins. It's huge. It's crazy.
I would probably agree with you.
I wouldn't call it bad, because it's... God, the art is gorgeous, and I'm fascinated with what's going on, but I'm like, what the hell's happening?
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. I've read Hickman's, like, he did maybe 60 issues on Fantastic Four and F4, where he had all these moving pieces, and it all ended up making perfect sense and tying all back together and being beautiful. So I'm going to trust that he's going to be able to tie all this stuff.
I'm in it for the long haul. I think it's going to be amazing.
And the art is gorgeous.
Normally
I'm a big fan of Opeña. This is some of the best work I've ever seen of his.
Absolutely. Look at that panel with Doctor Strange early in the book.
Yeah.
Holy crap, that is so beautiful.
Yeah, it's really good.
This book is really great.
Again, you have to be reading everything in this. You have to read all the Avengers tie-ins, all the new Avengers tie-ins.
I'm a book behind, too. I still haven't read the one from last time.
It's not... There's a little bit. It fills in some stuff.
I didn't feel like I... Well...
It fills in... It's really good. You get more insight into...
I'm sure it is really good. I just didn't have time to read it before today.
I liked it more than this.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's really... Just seeing all the Illuminati deal with these lieutenants of Thanos. It's a lot of fun. So I'm a buy.
I would say I would recommend this as well. I'm in it for the haul here.
Yeah, it's... This event is something I can get behind.
Yeah, I think Marvel Mass Effect.
Yeah, basically. Kind of, yeah.
Pretty effing sweet.
Yeah. And lastly, this week... we're doing Venom number 40. They are shipping this out quickly because they want to, I guess, get to the end of the series.
Heartbreaking.
I know. Writer is Colin Bunn. Artist is Jorge Coelho. Colors by Lee Lefferidge. And letters by Joe Caravaggio. You can tell that he has condensed a lot of story.
Yeah.
In this, like, he's things that would have been. Maybe an entire book has been shortened to a page or two. That second page, where like Flash is dreaming, and you see like the Venom standing on top of was it Ben Franklin, with like all these flying like gargoyles around, destroyed buildings and everything. It's awesome.
I really thought you were going to say something different about that. And you're like, yeah, that's pretty awesome.
It's very awesome.
Yeah, okay. that's really cool.
It's like red.
It's like totally, it's got red everywhere. Red. I don't know why I'm we're going to talk like a lumpy space princess to each other.
Lumpy space princess for some reason.
Oh, yeah. It's totally
Jennifer! Yeah.
I don't want to go to make a point with you.
Brian, I did not say that.
Get off of me, Ricky!
And we're ridiculous.
Oh god, that's so good.
But we are basically going like fast forward through this story where we see Andy is mania and she's going fucking bonkers,
yeah,
wanting to get revenge for her father's murder, going after Lord Ogre. There's another, we're picking up a storyline from earlier in the series before we started reading about this Damon Hellstrom guy.
Mm-hmm.
We're also, and then now we're getting introduced to Crossbones trying to take out Mania. And that is a burly Crossbones.
I love Crossbones.
He has a good look.
Yeah, he does.
He's a really simple character. He's a mercenary that wears a skull.
I love that. I just want a book about Bullseye and Crossbones driving around in a van, fucking shit up.
Just call it Assassins.
The fuck shit up squad.
I really enjoy Flash Thompson's multiple disguises.
Yeah, it's a nice goofy gag, isn't it?
Yes, he looks like Dennis Nedry almost from Jurassic Park.
All of us know every character from Jurassic Park.
Newman,
that's what you have to say.
Newman with basically a wispy mustache.
You didn't say the magic word. This has been a really ridiculous, full of voices episode, hasn't it?
It has. I enjoyed this. We're reading this till the end. We got two more issues. Might as well keep going.
Yeah, it's Venom.
I'm enjoying it. I like it. I want to see what happens to Flash Thompson. I really hope he ends up in some book.
I like this book, but I didn't enjoy this one as much as all the other ones. No, but I agree with you. I just want to tough it out to the end.
This, like I said, it really is evident that he has had to condense things, to try and tell the story he wants to tell. Which I think I'd rather him do that than cut stuff out.
Yes,
and we lose plot lines that we've been following. I like his Flash Thompson. He's very kind of
Flash is such a good character. I love all the shit that they've put him through. It's made him so interesting. I just really like this character a lot. It's so good.
So I'm a buy.
Yeah. I'm a buy, even though this is not my favorite out of the series.
No, it's definitely not as good as the stuff that was.
Yeah, absolutely.
The last few.
It's no Venom car, people.
There's no Venomobile in this.
No Venomobile.
You can't hit home run every time.
It's true.
So I want to quickly mention that I read a few other books.
Ooh.
This week.
Reading. That's good. That's fundamental.
I've read Superior Foes of Spider-Man, #3.
I was just wondering about that book. What did you think?
It's good. Solid. Yeah. Really good, yeah.
This picks up right after where we read last time?
Yes, it does. Yeah. And it's really...
I nearly picked up the physical copy in the comic book store.
It's really good. It's funny. It's not setting into any kind of expected storyline. This issue went completely away from where I thought it was going to go.
Nice. That's good.
And it was very good. Very funny. Same kind of feel, but story went off in some tangent that I approve of.
We approve of tangents.
Tangents are good.
Yes.
I also read both X-Men Battle of the Atom 1 and All New X-Men 16, which is basically part 2 of Battle of the Atom. God, it brings in future X-Men to try and stop them, the past X-Men, from staying in the present. They need to go back in time.
I saw copies of that book at the comic book store, and I flipped through, and I'm like, what is this crap? What is happening?
I like it. I bought Battle of the Atom 1 first, and I said, if I like it, I'll buy the all-new X-Men. And I really liked it. So we're going to... It has all these different X... I mean, it's... I am a huge X-Men nerd. It has lots of really...
You're a huge nerd in general.
In general, but X-Men, I that's one of my specialties. So I really enjoy Battle of the Atom. It's fun. It's really... I mean, it's time travel. So if you don't like time travel stories, you're not going to like this. But it brings in all the different pieces So you want to see all the X-Men all together. No more, like, all interacting in different ways, including future X-Men and past X-Men.
I mean, why would I not want to see that?
Some people don't like it, I guess.
Those people are stupid.
I try not to make value judgments like that.
Ah, fuck it.
But that's this. I also read Trillium number 2, the aforementioned Jeff Lemire drawn book that Eric hates.
Ugh.
If you don't mind it, it's the story is going places. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
If you like the art style, you'll like it.
If you like the art style, you're wrong. But.
But that's what I enjoyed.
Would you recommend Trillium number 2 to me? Because I saw it on the shelf and I wanted to set them all on fire.
If you didn't like, if the art is not changed, you, I don't think you'll like it. The story, so
it's, is it just, it's just places. As bad?
I, the art is the same. I is like it, it.
Is it, does it, I'm sorry that you like it. Is it also a flip stupid book?
It is not a flip stupid book.
Okay, so that's just, good.
It's just a regular book because they're together, the two characters.
Yes, they have met in the middle.
They have. That's everything I've read this week, aside from what we've already gone over.
Sweet.
Sweet. Now, we're going to go right into Eric's Art Explosion. Okay, so this week, I came up with this kind of idea for Eric.
Do you want to make more explosion noises first? You're really good at that.
I am an artist in many ways.
You totally are.
So this week I came up with this. It's something I've kind of been interested in. Just the differences in between digital and, you know, traditional pen and ink on paper process. Because I know I've seen you. You've discussed it before, you know, in passing with me about you know, using your iPad, and I know that there's a lot of stuff out there for digital art. And, you know, I, when I'm looking at books, you always bring up sometimes, oh, this was done digitally, or this is obviously you know, not digital or something like that. And I'm interested in the difference. And I mean, I read artists' Tumblrs or their Twitters, and they talk about their process, and everyone is different in many ways, and I cannot get a hang of it necessarily because I don't have, you know, any kind of experience in it. And I was going to have Eric explain, you know, a very kind of basic.
We'll see if we can't muddle through this. I think I think it's interesting, and I want to try and come at it the way that you're asking about it.
Okay.
There certainly is. Like, some people just sort of think that when you're illustrating something, you know, in Photoshop or something, that it just does the work for you. Like, I actually had a friend, his dad said that, you know, you guys, there's not going to be any comic books in the future because all art's going to be done by computers. Not on computers, by computers. By computers. Because that's really the way that it works, Robbie. I don't know if you mean that.
Artificial intelligence artists.
No, I mean it sort of exercises the same muscles, you know.
Yes.
You're effectively doing the same thing, but with just a different medium, you know. That being said, you know, you have to. There's concurrent like skills, but it's. It's ignorant for me to just say the process is different, but, you know, you wouldn't necessarily have to do the same kind of underpainting, like if you were doing like an oil painting versus you were doing a digital painting. Like when you're doing like an oil painting, you actually have to think about the physical construction of it.
Right.
You have to, you know, not just sketch out how it's going to be, but you have to think about.
The
like
limits,
you know,
the limits of the paint and
to an extent, the limits of the painting, and you know what it's how it's going to react and how this color is going to look here and the physical properties of it. You know, knowing the physical properties of your paint is pretty important to becoming a successful painter. you know, you have to know that I can glaze over this and it'll look this certain way. And, you know, that's just a part of the mastery of it. Wherein, you know, there's certainly a mastery involved in, you know, doing a rich Photoshop painting, but you don't have to think about, you know, I need this kind of board and I need to prime it this way and it needs to be this sort of heavy. Otherwise, it's going to fall apart in a week.
Right.
You know, you don't have to think about that. And a lot of illustrators don't anyway, even if they are doing that. They're like, I don't care if this is archival. It doesn't need to last 50 years or 100 years or 200 years. It can rot after I take pictures of it and print it. Really, that being said, there's, you know, people can be just as masterful with either one. There's some people may have strong feelings one versus the other, whether one is inherently better than the other.
Right.
Do you have any thoughts of that?
I mean, just like in people who read books digitally versus mm-hmm. buy them in paper, I imagine there's artists who, you know, see purity in actual paper or canvas mm-hmm. or whatever physical media they're using mm-hmm. to.
I would actually make the argument. I would actually make the argument of this the other way around, that it's the richness of the media.
Right.
You know, and that really that itself makes a statement, and everything in digital art is trying to replicate that. You know, the good digital artists, either they're just trying to make it perfectly flat and pop art like, or like I'm looking at Esad Ribic and I almost want to say that this is that he's a digital artist. I'm not sure of his
process. Is, yeah.
But I mean, everything he's doing is to mimic like an actual, like, it's somewhere between watercolor and gouache and, you know, acrylic, all these sort of painting styles. Like, I see hallmarks of all those in there. You know, it's clear he's done painting, and it's, you know, being able to do one enriches the other.
Right. Yeah, you, like you said, they're concurrent skills.
Yeah, there's,
you're going to use a lot of the same skill set.
Yeah.
Either. It's not,
yeah,
they're not mutually absolutely. Exclusive.
Absolutely. I mean, but, you know, knowing keyboard shortcuts and things is not going to help you when you're painting in oil. In fact, it's just going to make you mad because you're going to paint something and then you're going to, in your brain, you're going to reach for Command Z and you're going to be like, damn it, that doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean,
I think every modern artist has had this happen to them.
I talked about it a few episodes ago about Fraser Irving.
Yeah,
I mean, he works digitally,
mm-hmm.
and I posted the YouTube video of him recording
in Potato Shop.
In Potato Shop.
What a dum dum. He calls it Potato Shop.
Potato Shop.
This is Potato Shop.
It was him doing 4 hours of work,
yeah,
in the span of 5 minutes because it's fast forwarding.
Of course,
but
that's got to be intense to watch. Oh my god, I feel like my brain would explode.
It's a lot of, I mean, but you can see the
absolutely
amount of work that's going into it. So
mm-hmm.
It
just always blows my mind because every artist's process, there's no one way to do it. That's kind of one of the beautiful things about art, in that there is no correct answer.
Right.
You know, everyone's got to find their own way. And when you see someone work something out like that, you're peering into their mind in a way that's pretty hard to see into any other way. That's one of the things I like about art.
Yeah, you know? It gives you perspective, but not on,
yeah.
on the artist and themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And not even whatever the art is itself, but even his process,
mm-hmm.
that reveals something mm-hmm. about the artist.
Absolutely. But I know I don't have, I know my process is not similar at all to the way these people do their stuff. I have no idea. Like, everyone is a friggin' mystery. Like, I heard a story that Adam Hughes told about Travis Charest. Right. Have I told you this story?
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Well, I'm going to tell it anyway because it's an excellent story.
I don't remember, so yes, please tell it again.
It was one of the early days they were working in the studio together. It was like the two of them and a couple of the other big names from that time period. And he saw Travis Charest draw for the first time. And he thought everyone in the studio was fucking with him. They're like, he's like, am I getting punked? What's going on? Because he said, Travis Charest doesn't draw like a person. He draws like a printer.
Right.
That he starts at like a point in the middle of the page and draws like spirals out from the center and just renders and renders and renders and renders and renders until he gets to the corner of the page and then he's done.
Yeah, you have
no key, no one that's a person can do that.
So you're saying that he is a machine of some sort?
Either that or some kind of space monster. I don't know. He could be a kaiju. I do not know. Kaiju.
You've told me that. I remember the story now, but yeah, that is freaky.
It's a great story. Yeah. It's so good. If you look at his artwork, I can totally see it because there's always some kind of really odd decision that he makes. Like someone's foot's twisted a weird way or someone's standing really unnaturally. It's drawn and rendered beautifully, but it doesn't look like it's really planned out the way you should plan an illustration, if that makes sense.
No, that makes sense.
It's a little bit weird how he manages to have such a sloppy process and still be such a top tier illustrator is really a testament to kind of how amazing he is. But yeah, was there anything specifically else you wanted to ask about comparing these two things, digital art and traditional media?
No, I mean that's a good discussion we had.
Pretty healthy discussion.
We could go on and on and on forever about it, really. But
and you know, I'm dying to.
We should probably just. That's a good introduction, I think, and we can come back to it in another episode and delve deeper or go somewhere else, like go into some kind of tangent from it.
You know how we feel about tangents.
We love tangents. We've already discussed that.
We have. That's our new slogan.
We love tangents.
Yup.
So
that was so good.
That was.
I feel so blown up.
That was the end of Eric's art explosion. Next up, we have Classic Breakdown. Bow, 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 bow. Okay, so this week we are doing Dark Victory by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. We had done Long Halloween not too long ago, and I had mentioned, well, we should do Dark Victory. And, I should get another exposure to this and see what I think. And see another amazingly drawn, beautiful Batman story. Mm-hmm. And this is a direct sequel to Long Halloween, where we see basically the aftermath of Long Halloween and the introduction of a new killer, the Hangman Killer. It's also a basically retelling of the introduction of Robin.
Mm-hmm.
Of their first team up.
Their first adventure.
First adventure. But, Eric, this is your first. You didn't read this before, right?
I can't remember if I had or not. Because I had sort of guessed the ending, and I felt like none of it seemed familiar until I got to the end. So maybe I read just the ending.
Okay.
Which is possible. That's a terrible way to read a book.
Just read just the end.
Yeah, just read just the end. Fuck all this shit. I'm just reading the ending. I'm reaching into the bottom of the box just to get my prize. That's the way things work.
What do you like this as much as Long Halloween?
Or do you like? I don't think I do like it as much as Long Halloween, but that's just because I think Long Halloween's a masterpiece, and I think this is. It almost seems to bite on it a little too much.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, it's the same kind of story. It's a detective story. It's a similar kind of killer. And the guy kills on holidays.
Right.
And given what's going on and how it resolves itself, it makes sense. But I would have preferred something different.
Okay.
Yeah.
The
first time, it was gorgeous. It was genius. this is just another story in the same world, and it's nice to see it, but it's just too much of the same feel for me. But it was by no means bad. It just doesn't come off as special, in my opinion.
I actually like this one more.
Really? That's very interesting. Can you tell me why?
I thought about it a little bit, and I think I like it more is because every character in this book is more flawed, more hurt, more damaged, more damaged.
Okay.
And it made them more compelling to me. Like it,
I think that's good, and I think that's very valid.
I had never read this before. I couldn't figure out. I cared about who the killer was.
Right.
I think it made me care more about who. Maybe it's just I've had additional time with all these characters. You know, obviously everyone knows Commissioner Gordon and Batman and all that. And I think also the presence of Robin made Batman more likable. Yeah. I didn't think Bruce Wayne was very likable in Long Halloween, or Batman was. And I understand that it's not always, I mean, he's not always supposed to be likable. But I think in this, he was a more sympathetic figure because you see him honestly trying to save this child who has gone through a very similar tragedy that he has gone through.
Hmm. There's more humanity there.
And I think that's why I like it so much. I still do not like how Tim Sale draws the Joker.
I think it's way better than this one than the last one.
It is better.
I think it creeps me out.
You don't have a mouth the size of like a page, but it's still not my favorite. You know,
I think the Joker art in this is even stronger.
Oh, it's than the Long Halloween. Aside from that's my personal taste.
Oh, I know, but I think it's a perfectly valid thing to say because it's weird and it does seem out of place. But that's kind of who the Joker is. He's like a friggin' alien, you know? He's so friggin' crazy. It's horrifying.
Yeah.
More so than any character, he's an effing monster.
Yes. But I guess what makes Joker compelling to me is that at one point he was a person.
Mm-hmm.
When he looks so, I mean, so unhuman, so inhuman.
Mm-hmm.
He does it. It kind of it makes him look just like, yes, he's like this weird mutant. And I think I always thought the Joker was more interesting when you see how damaged his mind is,
yeah,
versus how crazy he looks. And I think how he looks is a manifestation of the status of his mind, the psyche. But having a mouth the size of another person's head draws it away from me. It makes it more apparent that it makes me think that he's not human, not at his core was a person. And then some act did this to him where he's become, you know, a monster, as you said.
No, that doesn't even, it doesn't even enter my head. I just, like, see this panel, like, where, I don't know, what was his name? Alberto, when he shot the Joker.
Yeah.
And he says, "You shot me, you bitch."
Yeah.
And just, like, his face is so terrifying. It's, I can't even imagine. Like, it's such a horrifying thing to see that. And I don't know. I like the way he does it. I like cartoony and exaggerated stuff. So that's why I like. That's why I like Tim Sale.
Well, this, I mean, everything. I mean, it's beautiful. His work in this is amazing, and just the storytelling in it. I mean, without even captions, without the dialogue.
Yeah,
it's very absolutely strong. It tells the story without you having to know what people are saying.
Mm-hmm.
Like that page where Gordon and Two-Face are having the showdown with Two-Face has one of his lieutenants as a hostage.
Yes.
And you see their eyes back and forth.
And I remember the one.
Yeah.
I don't know where it is in my copy, but
it's issue, yeah, no, 10.
It's so good.
Would be
issue 10.
10 of 13, yeah.
I can probably put that together.
if you want to look. I mean,
10 or 13.
10 of 13. There's 13 issues in this. Yes. Serialized, so.
Yeah, I see where you're at. Yeah, good lord. This is...
That whole chase scene underneath the sewers.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. Really strong. The art, I mean... Every page is like basically an homage to classic gangster movies, and
oh yeah, it's a pretty amazing book. I really do love the team.
No, they and the, I we need to eventually. We should probably do one of their Hulk origin, Hulk Gray. It's called because they've done
so many Hulk books together.
They did Hulk Gray, but then they also did Daredevil Yellow and Spider-Man Blue.
I think I've read Daredevil Yellow.
Yeah. I've read all three, and my favorite was... Most people say Spider-Man's their favorite. I mm-hmm. love their Hulk. Their Hulk story. And Jeff Loeb, this is before he... tragically. A lot of people pinpoint his kind of... Where he started faltering. Mm-hmm. The storytelling is when his son tragically died.
Oh, wow. And
it obviously affected him.
Wow.
But, this is before then, and it's very strong, very good. Again, it doesn't really ease my thoughts about him, his kind of this thing of where he introduces every single Batman villain, because he does it in Hush as well. Again, I like this more than Long Halloween. I enjoy this a lot more.
That's good.
But I definitely would recommend this. I'd say read them both, and they really add to each other, though. You have to...
Yeah.
It helps to read. You read them in sequence, and you get a longer story. I also read Haunted Night, which is not connected to this. I mean, it's by Loeb and Sale. It's kind of too short for us to really, I think, focus on it in the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also really good. It's a collection of Batman stories that actually do take place all on Halloween. But and they highlight different villains and stuff like that. But it's fun. It's a lot. It's obvious. It's not as heavy as this is.
So it's pretty heavy.
Yeah, it is. It's a pretty heavy story. It's very.
It's watching a lot of people get murdered.
It is. There's a lot of murder, a lot of trauma, a lot of tragedy. That's probably why I like it more, I think, than the first one.
Because
all these people are obviously clearly trying to deal with the things mm-hmm. that have happened to them. You see them struggle. I guess it makes me feel more connected to them.
Truly, truly.
But I couldn't recommend it more. Excellent.
All right.
So that was Dark Victory, Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale. Available at your digitally or at your local comic book store. I know I see it every time I go to Tate's. We're going to finish up this week with something new. Not something new that we haven't done before, but we're going to end with something that we haven't ended with before.
It is going to be exciting.
It's time to put Eric through the ringer again with the Brian Lee O'Malley tweet quiz.
Oh, no.
This will be our sixth Brian Lee O'Malley tweet quiz.
What? No. Is it? Really?
Yeah, 6-1.
That was the fifth one.
No, we did the fifth one last time.
All right. I say we did the fourth one last time.
I'm fairly certain we've done 5.
All right, one of us is intimately familiar with our catalog, and I don't think it's you.
Regardless, Eric,
one of us remembered Wonder Queen.
However many we've done, Eric isn't getting any right at any point.
That's true.
The premise is
I know the difference in Superwoman and Wonder Queen.
Superwoman and Wonder Queen, you touche. I'm going to read four tweets, three of which are from Brian Lee O'Malley's Twitter feed,
oof.
One of which I have inserted that I wrote myself. Eric is to determine which one does not belong, which one I wrote.
I feel a little ill.
We got some winners this week.
Oh, God. That means they're going to be horrible.
Are you ready?
Ready as I'll ever be, Captain.
Okay. We have the first one is... Has anyone named their cat A, Ramiana Flowers, B, Ramona Meowers, B, or the second answer?
Yes,
number two. Why won't my anime DVDs go in my iPad? Number three, the word barking makes me think of trees talking, not dogs. And lastly, number four, I picked this one, or wrote this one. in tribute to you, Eric.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. When I'm penciling, my favorite thing to draw is pretty girls, but when I'm inking, my favorite thing to draw is lines. So, do you need them again? Should I read them again for the courtesy of our audience?
No, I don't need them again. You can read them again if you want to.
Yeah, everyone can hear them again. Number one, has anyone named their cat A, Rimeona Flowers, or B, Ramona Meowers? Number two, why won't my anime DVDs go in my iPad? C, the word barking makes me think of trees talking, not dogs. And lastly, when I'm penciling, my favorite thing to draw is pretty girls. But when I'm inking, my favorite thing to draw is lines.
That's good. I am going to go with C. Barking makes me think of trees, not dogs.
Is that your final answer?
That is my final answer.
Ding, 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 ding. Eric gets one right. Woo!
I felt pretty confident about that one. I feel like I might have finally gotten his voice.
It's a challenge every time I do this because it's a gluttony of options.
It's a bit.
He talks about Brett. You know how many tweets he had about the new Riddick movie this week?
Oh God!
Like 100.
Jesus!
And half of them are just stupid jokes about the word Riddick.
Because it has dick in it?
Yes. He's like, his full name is Richard Riddick. Richard K. Riddick or some shit.
What the fuck?
I don't know. But I thought you'd appreciate the last tweet, at least. I know the pretty girls. Drawing pretty girls.
I do like drawing pretty girls.
Yeah.
There's going to be some of those up in... whatever that place is.
Cafe Hay. I'll step in.
Yes.
But, folks, that's all we got for this week. I thought we'd end up a little light note.
That's a good way to end. We don't have to end with Black Cat falling into lava and dying.
We don't have to end with that. We end with Eric succeeding. He has a success.
Yes.
Yes.
For the first time ever in my life.
I have to redouble my efforts.
You do.
I'm going to have to get dumber.
Go smash yourself with a hammer.
Exactly. Right in the face.
Right in the fucking face.
So that was episode 18. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Facebook.com/HandsomeBoysComicsHour. You can also find us on iTunes. You search Handsome Boys Comics Hour, you'll find us. Please listen, subscribe, leave us a nice review. It helps us get more listeners. We love that. Also on the Tumblr at handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. I'm throwing stuff up there every day. Everything that makes me catch... Yeah, everything catches my eye, as I could say. Me, myself, you can find me on Tumblr at mixmasterserial.tumblr.com or on Twitter at mixmasterserial. That's mixmasterserial, all one word. You can tweet at me there. Leave us questions, comments. We'll answer them on the air. Address them on the air. Just
totally
shoot them at us. Eric, where can they find you and your stuff online?
You can tweet at me. I am Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R, Bad Example, on the Twitter machine. You can find my portfolio of artwork at freewillunlimited.com. And you can find many of the other things I get up to at ericzgoodnight.com.
So, until next time, have a good one.
Rock and roll. We're the strangers to love. You know the rules, and so do I.